Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, joined here in the Allstate Skyline studio by my good friend and former Tribune colleague, Bob Sector. And Bob, thank you so much. Happy Father's Day. And
same to you.
I was kind of thinking of both of us having had experience in Springfield.
That's a nice way of putting it.
At various points in our career. And then this kind of viral thing happens, the saga of Joe Crane. Joe Crane was the WICS Channel 20 weatherman. That's the ABC affiliate owned by Sinclair Broadcasting Company. And I don't know Joe. I didn't know him. I was just down in Springfield last week, you know, or 2 weeks ago from the end of session. Turn on the TV in the morning, there's Storm Team 20's forecast, you know, your news leader in Central Illinois. And you're watching this, and it's a relative starter market for TV broadcasting. And so you end up with a lot of very young people on. And then there's Joe Crane, kind of an older, steady hand, a veteran kind of voice, and providing some confidence to viewers. Then there was the issue of being told corporate-wide by Sinclair, known for its corporate-wide edicts, that, well, if there's some bad weather in the area, you have to do a code red alert. And this even made Stephen Colbert.
This controversy involving WICS, Springfield, Illinois' news leader, they were told by their corporate owners that every time there was any bad weather, everything from a tornado to a light drizzle, they had to announce it to their viewers with the graphic code red. The theory behind the code red is that it's exciting, it's grabbing, and more people would keep watching if you scare them until their pants are at code brown. Here's the thing, though. It's not all that informative. So viewers complained to the station with thousands of comments on social media, letters to the editor, frequent calls to local talk radio shows. Wow. Oof. Does this town consist entirely of old people? Dear television, I don't like the weather forecast changed. Also, Lorna Dunes are too pointy. Enter our hero, WICS meteorologist and Norse god of beige, Joe Crane. Crane was the weatherman there. Crane heard the calls of the people and went on air to take a stand.
We want you to know it's not us. This is a corporate initiative, the Code Red Alert. And behind the scenes, many of us have tried to dissuade it for the last few months to try something else that's less controversial to the viewers. So keep in mind, despite the fact that this facility is owned by a corporation, it's still licensed under the authority by the Federal Communications Commission to serve the public interest, convenience, and necessity.
And that got Joe Crane fired.
Yes, it did. And you know what's interesting about it is that that's not the most offensive thing that the ownership group of that station does. So, I mean, it's owned by Sinclair Broadcasting, which almost bought the station, right?
It almost bought Tribune Broadcasting.
Mm-hmm. And
I don't think I would see Mr. Skilling doing Code Red alerts.
No, but, you know, we were all joking or shuddering or whatever it is about whether the WGN was going to have to do these must runs, which where they have very right-wing commentary aimed at supporting their buddy, the President of the United States.
Boris Epstein.
I think that's how you pronounce it.
Among others.
Yeah. And you do not deviate from that. And luckily for Chicago and many other cities, that deal fell apart. But they'll be back next year when they are in partnership with the Cubs, right?
Yes, they are running
the cable network.
They are running the marquee network.
So we'll see what they do with sports.
Well, they do have the tennis channel.
Well,
I can't say that I've seen the Tennis Channel.
No, I have not.
But Sinclair Broadcasting runs the Tennis Channel as well. So, yes.
This is the future.
That's the future as we know it. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you again for coming in, and I thought you would enjoy a little Channel 20 drama.
I'm so old. That used to be the NBC affiliate. I don't know when that changed.
I believe it was during the time of high ratings for Monday Night Football.
Okay.
That's, yes. But anyway, I kind of wanted to get your take on Governor Pritzker and this very activist agenda that he put in place, and the fact that legislators largely complied with it.
Yeah, and it's interesting that a lot of the Republican side of the aisle went along with it too. And you've got to think that those guys, even though Bruce Rauner was their, you know, provided them with all the resources they needed to try to get reelected, and obviously didn't work out that well for them. But those guys, to some extent, have got to be really happy to see Bruce Rauner gone.
Except now they have to fend for their own for money.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But, you know, he was very hard for the Republican side of the aisle to deal with. Remember the grand bargain that a couple years ago that they all thought they had worked out, and then Rauner came in and scuttled it? And, you know, which is why several people on the Republican side of the aisle finally broke ranks and voted for a compromise budget.
Well, and Senate Republican leader Christine Rodonio left.
Yes, absolutely.
I just wonder where goeth the Republicans.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, Illinois is sort of an island in the Midwest. I mean, we are the we're the one clearly Democratic state, the downstate secessionists, notwithstanding. You know, there's not a lot of... it's going to be a long time, I would suspect, before the Republican Party comes back in any meaningful way. Although you can see that part of Pritzker's agenda has been raising taxes, and that, you know, has the tendency to create a backlash. So if you're going to campaign on something, that would be it.
Well, when you look at the fact, you know, with the fact of the $45 billion capital improvement bill, which relies on expanded gambling, it relies on doubling the gas tax, it relies on increased license plate fees, cigarette tax increase. Obviously, Republicans, I think, for the most part, felt that after the previous term of Bruce Rauner, they didn't have much to show for those 4 years. And at least with capital, yes, there's the odorous tax increase, hold your nose, but there is also the advantage of having those check-cutting, ribbon-cutting ceremonies as you see tangible improvements in your community.
Yeah, the interesting thing will come next March when we'll see how many of, well, we'll actually know before then, but we won't know the results till then, how many of the Republicans get primaried by candidates farther to their right. And we'll see how that works out, whether they, you know, whether the polarization continues or whether they can ride that out.
Yeah, and I think, you know, obviously, as we've seen, the divides are very great now between, and it's not just Chicago and the rest of the state, but those divides are getting murkier because when you look at the collar counties.
Yeah, it's just the collar counties are getting more blue all the time. And so what's left of the Republican Party there is getting farther, is getting more red. And, you know, it's a great recipe for having candidates on the fringes prevailing in a primary but not prevailing in a general election.
We're speaking to Bob Sector, my good friend and former Tribune colleague. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Skyline studio with my good friend Bob Sector, my former Tribune colleague and one-time editor. We still speak to each other regardless of that.
I apologize for everything I did.
Yeah, right. You never apologized once.
Well, I'm doing it now.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough. So we have the first Democratic presidential debates coming up in just a couple of weeks. And you've got, I forget, I know there's 23 candidates.
Yeah, and three didn't qualify for some reason.
Right,
either.
And so you've got the orange group and the purple group. I don't know what that means, but that's NBC.
So at least it's not code red.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, yes. Which is now weather worn, I've been informed.
Okay.
Not to be confused. So the purple group, you've got Michael Bennett, Joe Biden, Pete Buttigieg, Kirsten Gillibrand, John Hickenlooper, Kamala Harris, Bernie Sanders, and a few others. That's a pretty big lineup there. And then on the orange group, Cory Booker, Julian Castro, Bill de Blasio, Tulsi Gabbard, Jay Inslee, Amy Klobuchar, Beto O'Rourke, and Elizabeth Warren. 2 hours of debate each night.
Okay, and who's going to watch all this?
I don't know. Well, we'll have to.
Well,
some of us will.
Some of us will. Is there a ball game on that night?
I'm sure there is. But I... That just... At what point does the Democratic field start winnowing?
Well, let's be fair. It hasn't even started yet. We're talking about the first. Well, no, but we have not had the first debate. Remember, 4 years ago, about this time, we had those endless Republican debates with 17 people on stage at some point.
Well, you had the adult table and then the kids table,
right? It's partly what enabled Donald Trump to insult his way into the presidency, because he just commanded attention because everybody else had 2 minutes to speak and he would sit around and insult everybody, and that's what made all the headlines.
So, isn't there that potential of one of these lower polling candidates trying to use this as a dominative kind of bullying force?
Sure, but they're Democrats.
Well, what does that mean?
Because they just sort of don't do that. There's a lot of kumbaya, and they're going to, they're attempting to play by some set of rules, and there isn't, as far as I know, maybe I'm forgetting somebody, there's not a Donald Trump among them. The perhaps the closest thing you're going to get is Bernie Sanders, and he's not into insulting other people. He's into ripping the Donald Trump to pieces and the business world and capitalism and everything else.
Well, but I still wonder if we aren't going to see, because we still have a Democratic Party here, much as kind of what we saw from 4 years ago with the Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, kind of a party that's polarized.
Extremely so. And Joe Biden obviously is a lot more akin to the Hillary Clinton school of politics than
the establishment wing.
Correct.
You might say.
Correct. Now, are they going to start attacking him for his policies or for his willingness to talk to Republicans? I don't know.
You've kind of seen that already. I mean, look at the flip flop on the Hyde Amendment, for example.
Sure. Okay, and so he did that, but it's interesting. Once someone changes their mind and admits it, once someone says, "Whoopsies, I screwed up. That was wrong," it's really hard to continue to attack them.
Is it though? Yeah. I mean, given the issue of women's reproductive health, mm-hmm, in the Democratic Party, that it just became a dawning awareness on Joe Biden's part?
Joe Biden, as he said, has been around a long time and seen and done a lot. So, there's a lot of other things that he's flip-flopped on as well. So what's the line of attack? Is that you're not sincere now? I mean, remember Obama actually pushed by something Joe Biden did, changed his mind on gay marriage.
Right.
So, you know, it's been a consistent, you know, Democrats have taken the position that they can, quote unquote, evolve. You know, but this thing on abortion was somewhat sudden for Biden. But is that going to be the cutting edge issue of the Democratic primaries? I simply don't know. But there's a lot more that they're alike than they are the variety of candidates than they are separate.
Well, and I've already noticed we were talking about, you know, kind of the changing suburbs here too, and mm-hmm. so you've got, you know, Sean Casten that. Democrat defeated in the 6th Congressional District in DuPage, now is facing a challenge, a Republican contender, who's Evelyn Sanguinetti, the former lieutenant governor under Bruce Rauner. And every missive that they send out is attacks Casten as Democratic Socialist.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing, because nobody really knows what that means, and Bernie Sanders is most associated with that term, and he hasn't really defined it very well either, although I've heard him in the last few days.
Yeah, he's been trying to.
And he's defining it as saying is that Republicans believe in socialism for the wealthy and capitalism for everybody else. And I don't know if that's an effective tool, but they're trying to equate the chaos in Venezuela somehow to the term democratic socialism, which is kind of a stretch, but it might work with some people. I don't know.
It's going to be a long, long campaign season ahead.
Yes, it is.
I was on MSNBC last week, and Jay Inslee was also on, the governor there. Who referred to Des Moines. And I'm thinking, man, it's got a long way to go here if you don't know how to pronounce the Iowa capital city.
Who was it? Who was the Republican candidate for president of like two cycles ago? Oh, is it Michelle Bachmann who mistook a town? She made a mistake about a town in Iowa. What was it? It wasn't Storm Lake, was it? But she didn't understand
some of the history
of the town, which is a bad thing to do in a primary election in Iowa.
Exactly. Or be the Republican candidate, a Republican candidate or a Democratic candidate campaigning during the Iowa State football game. Not a good idea either. Bob Sector, my good friend and former Tribune colleague, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
No problem.
We'll be back with more right after this.